So we all kind of get online and we get our sticks and we just tear off at this bear, just screaming like banshees, beating the bushes with those sticks. And that bear looked up.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Hayden Alabama Podcast. We're Southern Storytellers. I'm Philip.
I'm Shane.
I'm John.
And I'm Andrew.
This is one that we've been trying to make happen a year.
A minute.
Something like that.
Probably close to a year. And so our guests here are both from Andalusia. They're both in timber, and Laughlin actually helped us produce, what, four shows? I think they helped sponsor four shows a little while back, and so here
and
we are.
And hopefully we helped them.
We actually did, and maybe you can tell that story later on. We'll save that for a little bit, because that is a pretty cool little story. But, Mr. Laughlin, you said that all the fun happened in your career in the early days. So you're going to be taking us back a few years. I'm looking forward to hearing these stories.
Yeah, it all started in the mid-70s. I graduated from Auburn in 76 in forestry. So one of the guys that had graduated a couple of years before me was, I didn't know his brother, but they were twins. And the way the timber selling and buying went on at that time was everybody that owned some land, well, most everybody that owned land and or around still lived on it. So they were very hands-on with their timber, and they wanted to be completely involved with every part of it. So my friend happened to find out this old man down there had some timber for sale, and he hadn't heard about it. So he said, I rushed down there, you know, and I said, hey, I heard your timber's for sale. And he said, yeah, I know it. You came by here yesterday. And I sure hope you're going to give me a better price than you did yesterday. And so light bulb went on, and brother's been here. And he said, yeah, I know. I wasn't feeling too good yesterday. What did I tell you yesterday? And he told him, you know, exactly what he had said. And he said, oh, yeah, I'm sure I can beat that price now. I can do a little bit better today. And that's how competitive the timber business was in South Alabama. You cut your own brother's throat to get a track of timber. And but as it turned out, neither one of them got the timber.
Oh,
somebody else bought it. So
it probably was the best thing that could have happened.
It probably was. Yeah.
Save
Thanksgiving. Kept the family together. And
I got a similar story with my brother.
Do you really?
Well, I was dating old girl one time.
Oh, my goodness. Let me fix this before you start
getting worse now.
Hold on. I got to go a little lower. You sit so tall.
I don't know here. I'm sitting like Miss Brenda did.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I was dating an old girl one time, and I took her out on a couple of dates. Things were going well. Met her family, and I thought, man, this is really going places. And we weren't too serious, but I was serious enough to ask her to go, hey, well, let's go out next weekend. And we're driving down the road, and I said, hey, you want to go out next weekend? I said, there's a new movie coming out. We'll go watch a movie, maybe go get something to eat. She thought a minute, and she said, well, I think I'm going to go. I've really got another date lined up. And that was fine. I was glad she told me that, because I was expecting, or, you know, a lot of them wouldn't even tell you that. They'd just blow you off, and you'd never hear from them again. But I said, really? I said, well, now, here we are. We went out two or three dates. Ain't nothing happened. Who in the world are you going out with? I was just prying a little bit. She said, well, I don't know how to. I'll just be honest with you. I said, well, that's good. We've already gotten this far. She
good
said,
place to start.
Yeah. Your brother called and wanted to know if I wanted to go out with him. And I said, that dirty dog.
And followed through with it.
And she agreed. And they went and ended up dating for a long time after that. But that's so I know how it is. Back home, the dating industry was about like the timber industry, obviously, in Monroe County.
Well, while we're talking about the landowners, I think this was the first, maybe one of the first encounters I had. They said there's an old man up at up there at Fatima Tower, and he's got some real good timber, and he's talking about selling it. And So going up there and see him. So I walk up and I don't have a chance to say anything and introduce myself or anything. And the man turns to the woman. It's a son who's about in his 50s and his mother, who looks like she's about in her 90s. And he turns to her and says, "Hey, Mama, I think he's an October baby." And I said, I didn't say anything. I'm just, you know, kind of taken aback. She said, "Yeah, he is. He is an October baby. October the 6th, I believe he's, it may be the 7th. It's the 6th. And that's my birthday. And I've never seen these people before in my life, you know." And I said, "What have I gotten myself into?" After I left and talked, of course, I told everybody I saw about it, and they said, "Oh yeah, he does that all the time. They can predict your birthday." But they were living, were still living in the 19th century. You know,
wait a second.
You'd never met them.
Never met them.
They didn't know you.
Didn't know me. In fact, I had just moved to Monroe County. And had only been living there a couple of weeks.
You can't tell me.
Were they witches?
I was like, you can't tell me for one second you didn't think, I need to get out of here.
That's how competitive the timber business was. No,
you didn't see the timber. It's good timber now.
It was good timber.
Yeah, it was good timber, buddy, and we needed it.
Well, if I have never met somebody and they go to telling me things that they know about me that they shouldn't know, I'm going to go immediately that they sold something to somebody that they didn't need to sell.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't know what kind of what it was he had, but he had the gift.
I've never heard of anything like that.
Wild. No, he was talking about them sweeping the yard. That was what, you know, used people nowadays, they go cut the grass. Yeah. Used to the kids, that was all they did most of the day. They'd sweep the yard, keep the grass from growing.
Right.
Keep the snakes away. That was one reason. And they lived in the middle of the woods now. I mean, it was the woods.
That's wild.
It was wild.
Did you get the timber?
No.
Didn't get the timber.
The guy that got the timber had
what was his birthday?
I don't know. But he had lived there all his life. They knew him. He knew, you know, they knew one another. And he had been courting them for about a year or two.
Well, you didn't get an explanation. You don't know if it was something they used by hair color and height, but they knew.
Wow, that's crazy.
I never went back. I don't blame you that they didn't go to town but about once a month. The little Camden was right up the road, but they would go just like people used to, you know, go to town once a month. But he carried a notepad with him, and every time he bought something, he wrote it down. So he went in the barber shop to get his hair cut and thanked the barber and left and went down to the hardware store and bought something and went to write it down. And he noticed he didn't write his haircut down. So he went back to the barbershop, and he said, "Hey, I didn't pay you for that haircut." And he said, "Yes, you did. You paid me." And he said, I didn't write it down. I didn't pay you." And so he got double pay for that haircut.
He wasn't going to leave.
He wasn't going to leave until he took the money.
You think it's a short-term memory thing? Like he is like, if I don't write it down.
It didn't happen.
It was just a habit with him.
Wow.
He wrote everything down, you know.
That's pretty neat.
But yeah, he was a neat guy, but
I'd like to see that notebook.
No joke. Andrew, yeah. Tell us one.
I used to do a lot more prescribed burning than I do now. I still do a little bit, but I used to do a lot. I had a power torch, and it was just hooked up to a battery, steel tank rode on the back of my truck, and it just shot fire through a little diesel pump. Real simple. I built it with my brother-in-law one weekend. Real easy, but anyway, it would shoot fire off as you drove. It would set fire behind you, more or less. So I needed some stuff done on my four-wheeler, took it over to old guy, and he's inquiring about this contraption on the back, and I'm explaining to him, you know, this is power torch. I use it, you know, I do burns for people and stuff like that. And he said, oh, yeah, you know old so-and-so. And the name didn't ring a bell. And I said, no, that's right. I don't think I know him. And he said, yeah, he's in that same business. And so now I'm really thinking, I'm like, who is this fella? Never heard his name in my life. And I said, yeah, no, I've never heard of him. And he said, yeah, he's burned down a bunch of houses. And I said, houses? And he said, yeah, he burned down a house right over there. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, yeah, for the insurance money. And I said, no, sir. I'm not leaving here until you understand. That is not what I'm doing.
That sounds like you were in Walker County.
Yeah, I guarantee you could build a clientele.
Especially if
you could get away with it, no questions asked.
No doubt. Well, old so-and-so had apparently had a long career of it, and he got away
with it. That's crazy.
Wow.
But he had a reputation. So what was he doing on a percentage?
I have no idea.
He didn't ask.
I went straight into explaining. You know,
yeah, I want to separate from this real quick.
Yeah, worst thing I'm going to burn up is a diamondback nest.
If you're thinking about selling your timber, I know a guy. When Andrew Laughlin called me, I quickly realized that his main concerns were standing by people's side and helping them avoid regret when making a once-in-a-lifetime decision. Andrew is a small-town Alabama guy, family man, and second-generation forester. Laughlin Forest Management specializes in timber sales, management plans, reforestation, and all things private land management. Do not let that log skidder near your property before you give Andrew a call at 334-804-7490.
You mentioned in the prescribed burn that you may get a diamondback nest, which to me, I'm feeling like that's it. I'm willing to pay you a little extra to get that. But that's not – you have some snake stories.
I do. You know, and everybody – that's the number one thing people ask me when they find out I'm a forester is want to know about snakes. And, you know, snakes are on everybody's mind as soon as they step in the woods, I think, you know, especially in the summer. And when I started, I'd be lying if I didn't tell you that they were on my mind a lot, you know. But – it's like anything else, you know, calculated risk, complacency. You get used to it, and it doesn't bother me at all anymore. But I've got a couple of funny little snake stories that I tell people. One is I was flagging out a line. I had loggers doing a thinning, and it was like a third thinning. So this is great big old timber. You know, it's marked. I'm marking all the poles. I'm marking the take trees. But there was a gully that ran up into the stand, and imagine the stand is right here. The gully skirts up and then the stand is back behind it. So if you're bopping along in the cutter, you know, you just see trees. And then there was a wall of kudzu where the gully was, thin wall, and then more trees. And so I said, that man is going to drive right through that kudzu wall and fall to his death. I mean, 25, 30 feet straight down in this gully. And so I took out my flag in and I'm flagging up this gully, like, do not cross this. And so I'm working it all the way around. And as I get down, the gully tapers to where it starts, and it's getting shallower and shallower and shallower. And just like every other gully I've run across in this part of the world, it's full of trash at one point. You know, somebody, like, easy spot to go dump trash, they're going to do it. And so there's a pile of trash out there, and there's a bunch of these old metal 2-gallon Pennzoil cans. And these things are cool looking. I mean, they're probably from the 60s or 70s. They had a heavy duty metal wire handle, you know, and a little spout, you know, 2-inch diameter spout on the top. And I said, man, I could put like chainsaw gas in one of those or something like that. You know, I just thought it'd be cool to have one if it was intact. So I go to sifting through this pile of buckets and trash, and I'm picking them up, and it's kind of a cool spring morning. I think I was wearing a jacket still. And I pick one up, and it's not, the bottom's not rusted out in it. And I said, hey, this is a good one. It's kind of heavy. It's got water or something in it, mud, I don't know. But I pick it up, and I'm like kind of shaking it like that and hearing the water slosh. And about that minute, the bottom rusts out, and something falls and hits the ground right in front of my feet. Well, I look down, and I'm looking right at a big old timber rattler on the ground. And for some reason, my brain was just not ready to see a timber rattler fall out of a can that I was holding. So I'm looking, I'm like, why would somebody put a snake in a bucket? You know, like, what is that? And then about that time, I'm like, that's a snake right at my toes. And I look up and hanging out of the bucket is another one. And so, and so I just dropped the bucket and I ease on back. And I mean, nobody did anything. We were all just surprised to see each other. And so I backed up and the snakes, the one that was hanging out of the bucket, he kind of worked his way back up in there. And then the other one kind of slowly worked his way back up in the bucket. And I just walked off and left him.
Two in one bucket.
Two in one bucket. But that was the last time I've sifted through trash in the woods, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, you got that right.
But, boy.
That'll make you.
I got chill bumps all over my arms. We had a guy come to church the other day and lead a security prep.
Right.
And he said, whether you think you'll do it or not, the majority of people, when they're faced with a danger they weren't expecting, the first move is they'll freeze.
Freeze, yep. Yeah.
That's the fourth F that nobody talks about. We used to talk about that a lot in the Army. There's a, you know, the third F, the fight or flight, you know, is all everybody talks about. But fight, flight, freeze. Freeze is a lot more common than you think.
And wouldn't have thought that you would have been. Have thought you would have done that.
Yeah, got me. Speaking of freeze and snakes, there's a community college here in Andalusia, Lurline B. Wallace Community College, and they have a forestry program. It's the only 2-year program left in the state. And so I'm super fortunate to be in close proximity to them, and I work with them a lot. I go over and teach little guest classes every now and then when they're doing certain subjects, but also hire interns from there. And I've got a slew of just great boys that have come through my internship. And a few years ago, I had a boy from Evergreen that was interning with me. And he and I were up in Butler Springs, middle of nowhere, where Butler County meets Monroe County. And we were crossing this big hardwood bottom. And it's summertime. Ronald's behind me. He's got a walking stick. You know, I make all my interns carry a stick. And so he's is hot, tired. And he's leaning his chin on that stick. And I stop and I pull out my map and my compass and just making sure we're going in the right spot. And I just hear Ronald say from behind me, "Mr. Andrew, take 2 steps forward real slow." And I didn't even look down. I trusted Ronald. He was a snake killing machine. And and so I just took 2 steps forward real slow and I turned around. And Ronald had broken so many sticks on snakes. He was stealing broom handles from his girlfriend's grandmother's shed. And he had this red broom handle. And I just see a flash of red flying through the air. And it comes down right behind me. And there's a huge timber rattler coiled up. And Ronald smacked that thing a few times. And, you know, when the dust settled from it, he said, "Your heel was on his outer coil."
Goodness gracious.
I step on them all the time. I stepped on one on my birthday just a few weeks ago, copperhead.
He didn't get you.
I was standing on him when I saw that one, the copperhead, and I jumped and said all kind of words I shouldn't have said. The interns were off in the woods. They thought I fell in a well because apparently my voice went up and then down.
You'll find out if you quit cussing yet or not doing something like that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, you will.
You will.
I was digging them out of somewhere. I don't even know what I was saying. I might have been speaking another language.
Yeah.
I keep telling my boy, though, if you look for them, you're going to find them.
You are.
But if you don't look for them, you won't hardly ever see them. But
I think if you step on them and you keep going, they're content to just stay hidden. Yeah. They're scared to death of you because they know they're going to get the stick.
They know. Especially from Ronald.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Ronald's going to get them. Ronald, I followed Ronald, one of Ronald's flag lines one time, and there was a barbed wire fence. I'm coming down the fence, and there's a water moccasin laid over it. Get a couple hundred yards down, there's another one hanging over it. A little bit further down, there's a chicken snake hanging over it. Didn't discriminate. He killed them all.
Wow. Getting rid of them all.
My man. He's a man after my own heart. Some people get mad at you for killing a snake.
I don't kill a chicken snake.
Or they black rats. Snake.
Yeah, they eat all the rats. One day I come home from work and I was going around to check the tomato plants or something, and Sarah come in behind me and she went to hollering at me. And normally that means I've done something incorrect. And I go running back over. I said, "What's the matter with you?" She said, "Why did you put this?" And she thought I had placed a pretend snake on the wreath. And about the time she said, "Put this," it stuck its tongue out. And she went to scream. She said, "That's a real snake." I said,
"And I didn't put it there."
Put it there. Big old chicken snake wrapped around. It was waiting on that bird to come back.
They just scare me. They scare me. I don't like the way that they move. It's weird. And chicken snakes get so big.
I know, but they normally
I'm not saying I'm a chicken snake killer. I hadn't. And I let a king snake. I always let a king snake live. I saw YouTube video of them eating a copperhead hole, and they've had my heart ever since.
Now you're playing Mr. Laughlin?
He's got one.
Yeah. One of my first jobs, I worked for a consultant forester, and we're leaving the woods, and we're in a hurry to get out of there. And walking through that wire grass, and so those two Cajun boys are up there in front, and all at once they just saw, just say, "Whoa, everybody stop." And they had spotted a Eastern Diamondback, and he was coiled up, and he was so big. He wire grass, you know, is yay high. Well, he was about that much above the wire grass. But what he was doing, he was coiled up there and he was charming a squirrel. I don't know if y'all ever seen this or heard about it, but a snake, you know, you think about it, how does a snake catch a squirrel? He can't outrun him, you know. He can't climb up the tree as fast as a squirrel can, but they charm them. And they just sit there and they're just, the squirrel makes eye contact with him and he's just mesmerized. And he's the freeze part of it, you know, they just freeze. And finally they'll just go into a trance and the snake will just get them. And, you know, he doesn't have to chase them or anything. They just kind of pass out. So the snake's right in the middle of his snake charming, and the boys say, "We got to have that snake." And they've got a stick. One of them's got a stick with a fork in it. And he said, "Don't hurt him now. Don't hurt him." And they got me to get around in front of the snake and kind of make faces at him where he'd see me, you know, and keep his attention off them. And they snuck up behind the snake and pinned his head down on the ground with that forked stick. And the other one took his pocket knife and cut his head off.
Don't hurt him now.
The snake, don't hurt him. They wanted the skin. They, you know, they
don't
they
hurt the
to keep
skin.
The skin like, yeah, intact, you know. So we load up the snake. It's a huge snake. He's we cut about 3 inches of his head off, but the rest of him is about 6 feet long. And those diamondbacks, they're pretty, you know, they're big around, and when you skin him, his skin will be that wide, you know, almost a foot wide. And so we load up, get back to the truck, load up, and back to the Holiday Inn we go. And so they pile out there by the swimming pool and skin the snake right there by the swimming pool. There was a water hose there or something they needed. And so get him skinned and admiring the meat, you know. Man, this looks just like catfish or something, you know. And one boy said, "Go in there in the kitchen and see if they'll cook it for us." And so he goes in the back door of the kitchen, opens up there, and we're all kind of sitting there, you know, listening what he's saying. And in a minute, all we heard was just pots and pans, you know, just clang, clang. And he comes running out the screen door. "She going to cook it?" No, she's not going to cook no snake.
Not today.
My grandma was like, "Why she cook anything?" But she ain't cooking no snake.
She wouldn't cook the snake. But,
man.
That would have been a good deal, though. Got a got a meal out of it and everything. I'd probably fed four or five folks at least.
Yeah, she could have fed the whole everybody at the restaurant that night. She could have fed
exotic
them
on that
meal. One steak. Yeah.
You said them boys from Louisiana.
Yeah, they were.
Were they South Louisiana guys?
Yeah, they were Cajun boys.
Boy, they'll eat a lot of things.
Yeah, they'll do anything.
And make them taste good.
I'm gonna say they put enough seasoning on it, they make it taste right.
I didn't ask no questions when we were down there. Nah, that's a fact. I just ate it. But they talked about on one of our shows the different thing, nutria and snake, different snakes they eat, and one of their delicacies that they were so big on, snapping turtle.
Oh, Lord, a snapping turtle.
Said they love them. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even know you could eat a snapping turtle. I mean, that's not something I'd ever even try to skin out.
They talked about eating roadkill, you know. They said Daddy said they one of them, they lived down below New Orleans, down there in South Louisiana, you know, Lafayette. Yeah. I guess somewhere down that way. And he said, Daddy, every time he goes to town, he carries a can of spray paint with him. And every time he sees a dead coon or something side the road, he'd get out and paint a circle around that coon. He'll go on to town and then, you know, do his business. And then when he comes back, if he sees a dead coon and it ain't got a circle around it, he knows it's fresh. And so he threw it in the back of the truck, put it in the stew that night.
I don't remember if I saw that one on the way down.
Zeba wrote it down.
Yeah, I did. I wrote that down. That's exactly right.
Oh, man.
Hey, you got to have a freshness day somehow.
It's got to be fresh. It's all right if it's roadkill, but it's got to be fresh.
I gathered up an otter one time on the side of the road.
Really?
Yeah, skin it out. I had to go still. You know, in the state of Alabama, you got to have a tag to possess an otter pelt. So I called and told them, and they gave me a tag so I could keep the pelt. Otherwise, you ain't supposed to have it, supposedly.
I think I skinned the deer that I hit with my truck one night. Well, she committed suicide.
It's her fault. Yeah.
She was up on a bank that was on the side of the road there, and when my truck was right at her, she dove off the bank and into the front right of my bumper. That's where her head hit the front of that bumper, me going 55 miles an hour down the truck. I mean, she just, and she never knew she was hit. And I thought, well, I didn't hit nothing else. And so I threw her in the back of the truck. Why waste it? You know, I mean, it didn't hit her in the guts or nothing like that.
Yeah.
Free meal.
I mean, she's less skin up than a lot of them I've shot.
Mm.
No, that's right.
Now, when we were talking, Andrew, you have a military background. You've served our great country. And you said that, as I figured, there'd be some stories along the way. You ready to dive into those, or you got
something? Yeah. I can go into some. I was going to tell one the reason why I don't wear snake boots.
I would like to know that. So let's have that one first.
All right. So, you know, I always tell my interns, you know, bring chaps, bring boots, if that's what you want. The only time you're going to see me wear them is, you know, right after I step on one, you know, or right after I have a close call, you know. After me and Ronald got that one, you know.
If I got Ronald with me, I'm probably not wearing them.
Nah, yeah, if he's in front of me. Yeah. But what I tell him is I say, listen, man, those chaps are so hot. And the time of year where you got to worry about snakes, you really got to worry about the heat. And that's a way bigger killer.
Yeah, because it's always there.
The heat is always there, and it's hard to escape. You can reason with a snake. You know, snake's got.
I don't know about that.
He wants to live at least. He has self preservation in mind, and the heat doesn't even have a mind.
No,
and it'll take yours from you. But I've seen a lot of people go down from heat, and probably the biggest mass heat casualty event of my life was when I went to ranger school, and I was very lucky. I was like Brer Rabbit in the Briar Patch, you know.
Don't throw me in there.
They sent me to ranger school. I started June the 20-something, then I graduated September 26th, and I was fortunate. I went right through. I didn't have to repeat anything, but you know, everybody dreaded that block of time, and I loved it because I was like, I've done 2-a-days in this heat. You know, I've spent my whole life in this heat. So you start out in Fort Benning, Georgia, and way up in North Georgia. I call Prattville North Alabama. So
way up there.
But so it's a lot cooler than down here. But anyway, we started, our class started, I don't know how many people we started with, a lot. But we
whittled. What's a lot? Give me some fun. I have no idea.
I think we started with, like, maybe in my company, I think we started with like 130. Okay. And by the end of the first week, we were down to about 40.
Yeah, that sounds
about
right.
Most of those, you know, a lot of those were from failing events and stuff, but a lot of it was just from heat casualties. And we continued to lose guys all the way through from the heat. And so that first week, if you've ever seen anything on YouTube about Ranger School, they don't show you the real, the part that really gets you, which is the sleep deprivation and the starvation. You know, they can't. It's hard. That doesn't translate to TV well. No. They show you the first week, and you think that's all you do. So during the first week, there's some opportunities for you to get what's called a major minus, which is like a point against you. And then there's opportunities for you to get a major plus. There's a lot more chances to get a major minus than a plus. If you get a plus, it'll cancel out a minus. And it's like baseball. If you get three minuses, you repeat that phase. So by middle of that first week, I was up to two major minuses. I think I had one, and then I had two minor minuses, which counted for a major minus. So I'm staring down the barrel of one more to go, and I'm out, or I'm at least repeating this phase. So we get to land navigation, and if you get, you know, all 5 points or whatever it was, then you got a major plus. So I'm like, I got to get it. So I tore off trying to get that and ended up coming in short and having to repeat the land nav part. I didn't get a major minus, or I did get a major minus though. So it shot me in the foot. It went the other way. So I'm going into the first phase at Camp Darby with three major minuses, knowing that I'm about to recycle this no matter what I do. So I'm having a good attitude about it. And one day I'm on patrol and I'm the point man. I'm the compass man. And one of my good buddies, Nick Jacobson, is behind me. This is his patrol. He's being graded. So I'm just doing my best to try to help him out. And he runs up to me in the middle of this patrol and says, I need a map check. And so I say, okay, this is where the objective is and this is where we are. And he said, are you sure? And I said, I'm pretty sure. And he said, well, what are all those technical trucks down there? And I said, what are you talking about? And he said, at the bottom of the hill, there's a bunch of technical trucks. And he said, is that part of the objective or not? And I said, we're like 2 kilometers from the objective. You know, there's nothing. Well, this is the woods, man. There's woods down there. And I'm a little heat and sleep deprived and food deprived. And so I'm kind of listening to him. I'm like, yeah, maybe there are. I've never been to Ranger School before. Maybe there are trucks down there, you know?
I don't know. And
so I'm looking and then all of a sudden it just clicks, you know, it's like realizing that is a snake. You know, I just see it in his eyes and I'm like, he's gone, man. He's gone. And so I look up at the RI, the ranger instructor, and he's like, what's the holdup? And I'm flagging him over. I'm like, this guy's he's out of it. And so he rolls him over and he pulls his eyes back and he turns around and he looks at the whole patrol and he's like, I need two guys that aren't about to heat cat, two guys that aren't about to fall out from the heat. And I'm just an idiot. So I say, me, boss, you know,
yeah, me.
So me and this other guy are like us. And so he points to the other guy and he says, grab his rucksack, his backpack. And so the other guy grabs it and he says, you grab his body. And so I throw Nick up on my shoulders and he says, go. And he just tears off running. He's following his little Garmin GPS and he's just sprinting through the woods. We're sprinting after him. We sprint for what felt like probably a quarter mile, maybe more, maybe less, I don't know. But we come out of the dirt road and right when we get there, an ambulance rolls up, a Humvee ambulance rolls up and they're ready for him. And they got ice coolers and all that. And, I mean, I was pretty close to heat catting already. My buddy, who was in better shape than me, I don't have a problem admitting that. Nick Jacobson was a stud. But he'd already fallen out. And I just carried his limp body at a dead sprint for a quarter mile. So they start pouring ice. First thing they do is strip him down to nothing, lay him on a stretcher, and just start pouring ice on him. And bringing that core temp down. And so me and the other guy are just sitting there like, we don't know what to do. But we're seeing all that ice. We're seeing all that ice go on, and we're like grabbing our ice out of his armpits and everywhere else, and just grabbing it, just putting it on our face. but that was the only thing that kept me from going, because they were looking at us like, do we need to strip y'all down too? And I knew if they did that, I was out. But I ended up getting a major plus for doing that, so it pushed me through. And I saw Nick after Ranger school, and he thanked me for running him out and all that. And I was like, man, you saved me. You have no idea. You saved me. But
that all worked out like it was supposed to.
Yeah, man. It did. It did. And that's just the story.
And that was the only thing that saved you. There was no way for you to even get him.
No way. Yeah. There was, they didn't give him out easy. The easiest one I saw given out was pretty funny. There was an obstacle course called the Darby Queen, and it's awful. It's just, I don't remember how, I was probably blacked out, heated out for half of it. But it's just a miserable obstacle course. There's a section where you got a bear crawl from one to the other, and the RIs are screaming at you the whole time, and they're like, crawl like a bear, crawl like a bear. And this, everybody's out of it. And this one boy just mustered up everything he had, and he said, roar, I'm a bear. And he's just like monkey crawling across, and they're like, major plus.
Oh, wow. So
he got it for that.
They got excited about
him
embodying the
motivated
bear. Be the bear.
Yeah, be motivated. Mm-hmm. Attitude is everything, I guess.
No kidding. One story that you shared with me before today, y'all got a little reprieve.
Oh, yeah.
And that's I think that's very fitting, actually, for right now.
Yeah. You talking about the bear?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So so this was a couple years down the road from there. I'd gone off to a unit, and we were in between deployments. I'd gotten back from a deployment, and they moved me from being a regular rifle platoon leader. I was very lucky again, and I got a chance to be the reconnaissance platoon leader for our battalion. And the reconnaissance platoon's a lot of hand-picked guys. You know, they're studs, they're physical studs, they've got high test scores, you know. So it's kind of the cream of the crop that's in there. As far as the guys, for me, for the officer coming through, it's just timing, you know. So I'm not saying I was, but the boys were for sure. But anyway, so we had a long weekend, one weekend, and I told the boys, I said, hey, I'm going to do a camp out on Pike's Peak, going to climb it, spend the night halfway up on the first night, and then just run down the next day. I said, if anybody's interested, y'all are welcome to tag along. Well, I had about probably four or five guys say, yeah, that sounds like a lot of fun. Count us in. And so they came to me right before we left that day, and they said, hey, is it all right if we bring a little bit of something to drink, you know, on the camp out? And I said, hey, it's your weekend. You know, y'all aren't at work. You know, we're just going camping. All right. And so I figured they'd be reasonable about it. And so went on with it. So, we got out the next day, tore off straight to the trailhead. You know, we're getting there late, and we've got about, I don't know, probably 6 or 7 miles to cover from the trailhead to this place they call the bar camp. And it's just straight up Pike's Peak. We get there late. And so we're like, all right, boys, we gotta hustle to get up there. So we pretty much just run up the mountain, and we get there to bar camp, and it's still got a couple hours before dark. But there's most of the campsites are taken. You know, we were late getting started. So we put up a little spot on the edge, and we start laying out our little poncho hooches and stuff. And I say, I'm going to go check in with the ranger and make sure they know we're here. So I show up, and she says, hey, just so you're aware, there's a problem bear out here. It's a big male, and he's been stealing backpacks and food from people. So I say, okay, well, we'll be sure to keep our food up. So I go back to the boys. Well, while I've been gone, they've got the poncho hooches set up. Everything's ready to go. And they've also emptied out their backpacks. And that little reasonable amount of sipping that I thought they were bringing turned into a handle of Captain Morgan and a 2 liter of Coca-Cola. And they said, I am not carrying this one more step up this mountain. And they'd already tore into it. So I say, all right, boys, we got to be careful with our food. There's a bear up here and he's been stealing everybody's food. Well, these boys are already amped up.
Oh, yeah.
And so they say, where is he? And I say, I don't know. They just said he's around the campsite. And they say, let's find him. So I say, okay. So we all break off some sticks and we go walking around the edge of the camp area hunting this bear. And we find him. Sure enough, he's over there with a cache of backpacks and stuff. And he's just tearing them open, just having a grand old time. And we creep out there and we're like, what are we going to do? You know, this is a big male. I mean, he's every bit of 400 pounds. And so we just say, well, violence of action. So we all kind of get online and we get our sticks and we just tear off at this bear, just screaming like banshees, beating the bushes with those sticks. And that bear looked up and he was used to, I mean, Pike's Peak has a type, you know, that hiked those kind of trails. And we weren't that tight.
Yeah, we're not.
We were not that tight. Mm-hmm. We were wearing boots, not chacos. Yeah, that's right. And so he took off immediately. There was no stand up, stand his ground. He saw us coming and he hightailed it out. So we grabbed up all the backpacks and we took them back over to the ranger station and we said, bear's gone. We got all these backpacks back. But she scolded us, or she scolded me for doing it. And at the time I was, you know, 20 something year old, fillet everything, you know, and I was like, we're the heroes.
That's
right. You know, but
where's the news article?
Yeah. Looking back on it, I'm like, I disobeyed her order and put ourselves in a dangerous position, you know, but I get it now, but
yeah, but yeah. The bear's
gone. Yeah. The bear was gone. We saved backpacks.
But you take a group of young men like that, and you train them up to the highest level to just destroy. What did you expect?
You got to give them a task.
I mean, they're looking for somewhere to apply this knowledge.
That's right.
That they've just been given.
The bear is fair game.
I wish I had a video of those guys. Just here they come with their sticks and stones.
Like William Wallace.
Are you in trouble? Well, we hope you're not. But just in case you are, we know a good lawyer. Whitney Island here in Hayden, Alabama has law services, or maybe if you're not from Hayden, I'm sure she'd be happy to hear from you. So check her out at islandlaw.com. We appreciate Whitney and her sponsoring the show.
Andrew, were you ever deployed to Afghanistan during your time?
I was. I went twice. One time we went to plan a joint mission with the Afghan army, and they had like a highway checkpoint type building. And so we're all up on the roof with them planning this upcoming mission. And I'd been drinking green tea chai. They call it chai. Been drinking chai with them for hours at this point. And I look at my forward observer, Blake Adair, and I'm like, hey, come with me. I got to go add to the water level in the river. Yeah. So we both go down there and he's kind of watching my back and I'm watching his while he does his. We walk up to the banks of the Kunar River right there and he taps me on the shoulder and he says, hey, look at that down there. And the little chai boy that had been serving us chai the whole time is coming down with the dishes and he goes downriver from me and starts dunking the same glasses I'd been drinking out of right down in the river. Well, I'm sitting there thinking, golly. And then Blake taps me again. He says, I'll go that way. And there's a guy relieving himself facing the other direction in the same river. So he's downstream of both of us, just washing those dishes out.
Oh,
and, you know, I mean, you talk about the Cajuns eating funny things.
Did they use soap? Or are they just literally just
dunking rinsing that thing? They're just rinsing it out.
Rinse and repeat.
Rinse and repeat. I've eaten, I don't think I ever ate fish out of the Kunar, but I've eaten fish out of the Argandab River. And, you know, I guess you just put your Cajun hat on and compartmentalize it all. And
see, those are little things you take for granted.
Yeah.
Clean water.
Just clean water, man.
Electricity.
And Dawn dish detergent.
Yeah.
No sponsorship. Just
right?
Oh, where it's at. Man.
I think that's what we got on the sink.
but I had one more semi-funny deployment story, and that was as for my first deployment, and we're on a tiny little outpost, and it was, you know, the nights were usually really quiet. You know, I usually, you could kind of let your guard down a little bit at night, and it, simply just because we had night vision capabilities far beyond anything that they had. And so you usually felt pretty good at night. Well, one night it didn't go our way at all. And to make a long story short, we ended up shooting all of the mortar rounds that we had on our outpost, and we only shot them linear distance, about less than 1,000 yards. And I'm not a mortarman. We had mortars attached to us, and I understand them a little bit. So if there's any listening, they'll probably hate my explanation. But to make that thing go further out, you would attach a little charge to it called a cheese charge. And it looks like a big, like a half moon block of cheese. And it's just some kind of crazy flammable accelerant. And because we were only shooting them a very short distance, we didn't use any of our cheese charges. So we blew through, you know, a month's worth of ammo and had all of these cheese charges left over, and we had to get rid of them. So the next day, after we're cleaning up everything from the night before, we get to the point of disposing of the cheese charges. And so I go to the mortar section sergeant, and I was like, how are we going to do this? And we got rid of our trash only two ways. One was you threw it out of a turret, out of a truck while you were riding around, or you burned it in a burn barrel on the outpost. So we're like, let's take this crazy flammable stuff and just toss it into burn barrels. So we set up a burn barrel, and I can tell you how high the flames are because we had a 15-foot HESCO wall right behind it, and the flames were going about 5 feet above that wall. But we were playing the coolest game of cornhole you've ever seen, just taking those cheese charges and just tossing them in there. And I made them stop for a minute because I honestly for a second thought we were going to push the earth out of orbit. You know, it was just like a jet engine coming out of an old rusty burn barrel. But that's just, I mean, you give, you know, I was probably 25.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I was the ranking guy there at 25. You know,
I mean, making the best decisions we could make.
Millions of dollars of ordnance at our disposal. I mean, what do you think is going to happen?
Man. Yeah. That, I mean, you think about it, that's the age most of our fighting men and women. I mean, they're young.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I'm 44.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Babies.
Yeah, babies.
When I was 25, I thought I was kind of, had lived a lot of life, but.
No.
You got to be. Young men are invincible. That's part of it.
Yeah. And I did feel invincible. I didn't go to the military, but I felt invincible when I was that age. There's something about it as a young man. But we've talked about it a bunch of times. The decisions that we made literally because we thought we were untouchable.
Yeah. I wouldn't make them nowadays.
No. You tell me to go down the stairs too fast. I'm like, we're not
doing that today.
Well, Mr. Laughlin, you got two more to finish this up.
We're at church. Church is over, and everybody, it's a pretty sunny day, and so everybody's standing around out in the yard visiting. You know, everybody stands around for a while. It's not like going to church. And I go to a city church now in Andalusia. Everybody jumps in the car and heads
gone,
to the,
go get some meat.
But we'd stand around out there and talk, you know. And so we're standing out there talking, and Matt Millen Blodell had a paper company, had a 300-acre block of land right behind the church, and they were just got through clear cutting it. And so somebody looks up, and here comes Bullwinkle staggering through the clear cut. He's been chasing does, and he's just worn out, and he probably doesn't even know where he is. But the churchyard was like a park out there. It had big old pine trees in it. And he staggers out there in that park. And about three of them made a run for the pickup, you know. And they didn't quite get their rifles before he realized where he was. And
I'm going to get out of here.
He had a turn for it. But deer wasn't safe, you know.
No.
Turkey, if that had been a turkey, you know, well, you can't do it.
Had to watch
him. You got to just watch him. But the deer, he was fair game.
So nobody got him.
Nobody got him. He got away.
But, and that was back in the day when most people, that 30-06 was riding in them hooks on that back glass.
Yeah, it was on the.
I miss those.
I do too.
I miss seeing them in vehicles. That's kind of a little nostalgia there.
We even, I mean, you know, we'd go to school when I was a teenager. You know, you go to school and say, hey, I got a new deer rifle. You want to see it?
Come out here and look at it.
Come out here to the parking lot. We're out there, you know, behind the ag building looking at a deer rifle. You know?
Fortunately, go ahead.
If I'm going down the road and see that 30-30 hanging in that windshield, that back windshield, that's my kind of people.
That's, yeah.
I know I could pull him over and say, hey, man, I need a little help. Absolutely.
You wouldn't mind him stopping to help you change your tire. No. Actually, he's ready to stand posts if things got hairy.
Yeah, in case things got hairy.
Thankfully, Shane and I both got to experience the very tail end.
Yeah, the very end of it.
That was still acceptable. I mean, if my shotgun was out there in my truck, I would not even think nothing about it. And
I think my senior year, they had clamped down on pocket knives. That was about, you was just about going out.
I wore mine openly every day, just like it's on right now with a clip hanging out of the pocket from eighth grade through my senior year.
Yeah, that's wild, isn't it?
I mean, there was nothing to worry about. I wasn't going around terrorizing the school, you know?
Yeah. You know, it's gotten so bad now, you just say the word knife or something and somebody
gets squirrely.
But yeah, it is. But Andrew and I go to the historical meeting sometimes, Covington County Historical Society. So a couple of months ago, they had show and tell, bring something, you know, your family heirloom or something. So I've got a 50 caliber pistol that my great granddaddy had in the Civil War. And so I was asking around at coffee.
That's
I
awesome.
Said, I'm going to take the pistol to the historical meeting tonight. And one guy's a city councilman. He said, no, I don't know about that. Now, you're taking a pistol. I said, it hadn't been shot in 160 years.
Yeah, I don't have black powder.
Yeah, I ain't got any black powder. But, you know, but everybody is just kind of, you know, freaks out about, you know, guns and stuff. But I took it, and everybody enjoyed
I'm
seeing
sure
it.
Yeah. I want to see it. Yeah. I mean, I'm sitting here going, I wish you'd brought it with you.
That's pretty neat that you're able to keep that relic, because I think through the things, I don't know that I have anything that far back from my family.
35 years, that thing will be 200 years old.
That's wild.
Yeah.
That's crazy to think about.
There's, you know, I don't know if y'all know the Brennan Museum in Anniston. There's a natural history museum up there, and there's a guy, I think his last name was Brennan or Bremen or something like that. But his career, he went all over the world working for the CIA, and he collected military stuff like that. And so when he died, they made a museum. It's unbelievable. Y'all, it's not too far from
I don't think
y'all ought to either go through there. But anyway, that gun is in that same model is in that museum.
Same model. Well, I have some older things like that are probably that old, but none of it I know was carried by any of my family. Like, that's pretty neat to know that you got.
It was a family member.
It was a family member that carried it. Yeah.
There's your excuse to tell your wife to let you buy that gun.
Yeah.
That's what gets passed down.
It's going to get passed down.
It really does.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know many people that sell their guns at their granddaddy or great granddaddy.
No. If they do, it's bad.
Things have gotten bad.
Yeah. Or they've gotten bad.
Yeah, you're almost to call in the insurance guy to come, or the prescribed burn guy.
That's right. Don't call me, but I'll point you in the right direction.
That's right. Well, speaking of that prescribed burn, take just a minute and let everybody know about y'all's company real quick before we do scripture time.
Yeah. We're small family run consultant foresters. We work for private landowners. So we're the advocate for the private landowner. And the timber industry in this part of the world has changed dramatically from when he started. It's changed dramatically from when I've started. And also, the trajectory of the landowner has changed. And that's a good kind of segue into when I ran that advertisement for you. The very next day, I got a phone call from Mr. Gary and Mr. Lamar Smith, and they were both big fans of the show. And they were in a very similar situation as a lot of landowners there. It was their family place. Their dad and granddad had grown up on the place and knew it really well, and they had grown up in Prattville and Huntsville and lived off, and there were no more living kin around there. And, you know, they were just in the dark on how to take care of the place. And so, you know, it's just like me. When I start taking a carburetor apart, I'm calling a pro.
That's right.
And it's the same thing. You know, when you're dealing with most people's timber is their second biggest investment next to their house. And a lot of people, it's their biggest, even more so. And so it's just not something you want to take on lightly. And, so there's guys like me and a lot of others, you know, out there that just work for the landowner.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying, you know, there's a lot of wood buyers out there that I would sell my grandmother's timber on a handshake. And as a matter of fact, I've done that twice with my own grandmother's and my wife's grandmother's on a handshake. Knew I could walk away and I wouldn't have any problems. But there's a lot of snakes out there too. And so I'm
just, and if you're looking for them, you're going to find them.
That's right.
And if you, I'm sorry, Ronnie. Isn't it Ronnie?
Right.
What's the young guy's name?
Ronald.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Close. Ronnie, Ronald. That's pretty close.
For him, yeah, that's real close.
I mean, you know, and if you're going to get into snakes, you may want to give him a call.
Yeah, that's right. But that's right.
To clear this up, though, just to be sure everybody understands, who is the client that you can best serve that's in what exact position right now? They've got a piece of property. They've got some timber. They're wanting to sell that timber off of it. Is that your client?
Yes, absolutely. That or a client that is wanting to replant and start growing timber, even a client that is midway in the stand and wants to know what to do. You know, it may not be time to cut, but they just need direction, you know,
for the next 10 years,
right,
or whatever.
It's a long-term crop. You know, I got laughed at by a guy one time. I said, yeah, we'll be needing to thin this pretty soon. And he said, oh yeah, when? I said, probably next 3 to 5 years. And he said, our soon and
you're soon
in the same thing.
That's right. lastly, I think this is important too, because our audience is kind of broad now, thankfully. Y'all are so good to us. But you're down here in South Alabama.
Yeah, that's right.
But
that's right.
How far out, you know, would you want to call? Could anybody call?
Yeah, anybody can call. After I ran the ad with y'all, I got calls from Kentucky, Tennessee.
I mean, Hayden's might as well be Canada, though, for y'all.
That's right. It is. Yeah. Just about.
It's the Arctic.
Just about. Yeah. Montgomery's Central Alabama.
Yeah,
right?
You go.
So I will. I've gone all the way into North Autauga County, and I don't have any problems going up there. It's really I'm kind of tied to markets and the markets that I know.
Yeah,
and the markets that I know overlap into the Black Belt and the edge of the Black Belt, and pretty well from there all the way down to the Gulf. I don't go very far east. I'll go a little east, but I mostly go northwest, south. But yeah, absolutely. If anybody's listening and they think they need a consultant forester, you can be in Cleveland, Tennessee. Call me, tell me you need one. I'll call a buddy and put you in touch with a reputable. Matter of fact, a fella called from Tennessee one time after y'all, and I put him in touch with a guy that I knew up there. So
that's good. So worst case scenario, you get in touch with somebody who you might could do a handshake deal with.
That's right.
You know those people. Well, I appreciate you guys. We're going to do scripture time real quick, and this is a curveball, man. We're going to Judges chapter 2.
You can't judge me.
I'm not going to judge you. Let me give some context. Let me start with a story. 2 weeks ago, and I made a reel about this. Some of you guys may have saw that. I picked Virginia up from school. It was going to rain the next day. I needed to blow the gutters out of the leaves. Blow the leaves out of the gutters. Let's try that a different way.
You had a bigger problem the other way.
And it hit me before I got home. Bethany was working. And all I got is my youngin' there. And I said, I bet I need to figure out if she has to call 911, would she even know what to do? because my house is, you know, if I fall off, I'm not getting up probably. So I said, do you know how to call 911? And blank stare. I was like, do you know what 911 is? Blank stare. I said, okay. 911 is the emergency service that you call when somebody's in trouble. You need medical help, fire, all those things. So that's what 911 is. Do you know how you would call 911? I thought that was a chip shot. She said, oh, do you push the side button on the phone? I said, I don't know about no side button on the phone. I said, you just literally call 911, hit the green button for send, and you tell them. And then I thought it was something else. I said, do you know our address? And she knew part of it, but didn't know the rest of it. And I was like, man, we're in a bind. Mm-hmm. Like, I have not taught this youngin nothing. And there's no way I'm getting on that roof if she's my lifeline, because, you know, I might be blacked out. And so I elected. But what it taught me was is that I had not taught her. And if I've not taught her, I can't expect her to know.
Yeah.
And that's where we're kind of at in the book of Judges here in chapter 2. So obviously Moses didn't get to go in the promised land. He was kind of left upon the mountain, got to see it. God didn't let him go in there for reasons we won't go into right now. But it's turned over to Joshua. Joshua leads the charge of the Jewish people into the promised land. And now he's at the end of his road. His leadership has come into a close. And we'll pick up at Judges 2, verse 8. And Joshua, the son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died at the age of 110. And they buried him with the boundaries of his inheritance in Timnath-Heres in the hill country of Ephraim, north of Mount Gash. And all that generation, Joshua's generation, also were gathered to their fathers. And there arose another generation after them who did not know the Lord or the work of the Lord that he had done for Israel. And the people of Israel did what was evil in the sight of the Lord and served the Baals, which were the false gods. One generation not taught by the previous generation, and they go astray. I want to put that back on us, though. Just like I failed to teach my child what to do in the case of emergency, unfortunately, spiritually, we can get in a worse bind if we're not teaching our children about Jesus, teaching our children about the necessity of the Word of God. We can't expect them to be able to know what to do in the case of an emergency. We can't expect them just to find the Lord. I think that's our charge as believers, is to make disciples. And part of making disciples that Jesus commanded us to do is informing them, teaching them, showing them the ways of the Lord. And the penalty, if we're unwilling to do that, if we say, well, we want to let them find their own way. We want to let them make their own decision. Well, that's respectable. I understand that you won't do that. But we're called as believers to make disciples and share and to teach the way and the truth and the life. If we don't do that, what we're doing is risking our children going in the wrong direction. And they ended up in a pile, a big old mess.
Yeah.
And the Lord was gracious. And we see, you know, again, there's always grace with accountability. God is good. And he brought up judges and helped them along. But then it's this big yo-yo cycle. And they just kept repeating it. And it kind of, one of the factors there is it always goes back to not teaching them the way of the truth. And so that today it's no different. If we're unwilling to teach our children the way of the truth, we can't expect them to just find it.
No, they're going to find something.
Yeah. So just want to encourage you today, if you haven't been doing that, we're not throwing stones. I'm failing too. But I love these passages like this that let us know the importance of sharing it. So that's what I want to encourage you to do. If you haven't been sharing with your children, or maybe not even your children, those close, maybe grandchildren, start sharing Amen. Jesus with them so that they can avoid a lot of heartache in this life and certainly in the next. But you guys have been awesome today. I appreciate your stories. You took us places we've never been and never could go. And that was a lot of fun.
Even if you do have an October 6th.
That was a crazy story.
Well, we sure appreciated it too. We
absolutely. Really and your investment in the Hayden Outbound podcast.
Yeah. Oh, it's so. Been a pleasure. Trust me. I can't tell you. I rolled up on a logger. I think I told you, Shane hadn't heard it. Rolled up on him one day and cutter man's over there and he said, hey, this fella's famous. And he's telling the cutter man, he's like, he's famous. He's on that podcast.
Hey, not about a podcast. Well, I don't know about famous, but we enjoy it.
That's right.
So, and if you haven't subscribed yet, I want to encourage you. I failed again to do this. If you hadn't subscribed and you do enjoy it, I'm not asking you to subscribe if you don't. If you enjoy the show and you hadn't done that yet, would encourage you to subscribe to the show. It's the button that's on the screen. It's pretty easy to do and doesn't cost nothing.
Nope. It's free.
Mean a lot to us. But that's going to do it here in Andalusia, Alabama for the Hayden, Alabama podcast. I'm Philip.
I'm Shane.
I'm John.
I'm Andrew.
We'll see you guys next week.